What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning in to the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight, and I have a very special show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very gifted and talented musician. He is a musical director and producer for the Grammy Award-winning group, The Sounds of Blackness, and together they have earned one Emmy nomination, five NAACP Image Award nominations, and three Grammy Awards. Please put your hands together and welcome musical director and music producer, Gary Hines. How's it going, Gary?
Hey, I am cooling the gang by the grace of God, Brother Spud. How you doing, man?
Oh, my God, man. I am doing well, brother. Thank you so much for coming on my show to talk to me, Gary. I've been a longtime fan of you guys' legacy and your work as a musical director. I mean, it's just off the charts, and it's just unbelievable the success that you guys had together as a group, man. Thank you.
Oh, man, we truly thank you. And first and foremost, you know, we thank God, you know, who makes everything possible. And, you know, there's a scripture that says, how will they hear without a preacher? You know, that applies to us in that, how will they hear without a DJ? So we can make all the music we want, but without people like you and your show and that support Sounds of Blackness and the music that we try to do, the people would not hear it. So on behalf of the group, we truly thank you, man.
Oh, man, I appreciate that, Gary. Thank you so much. You know, talking about being a fan of the group, Gary, I just want to, you know, run up a couple of tracks that really stick to mind as one of my favorites of the group. And, you know, these are the songs that I still play and just play along with it because I'm a huge fan of playing covers as a keyboardist. And I just love the production that you guys have done over the years. And some of the songs, The Optimistic, your first single release, that you guys released, and Soul Holiday, I Believe, and The Pressure Remix. But as far as your commercial releases and things, I mean, these are the ones that really stick to my head.
Well, man, we're honored to hear that, brother, especially, you know, with you as a fellow musician kind of thing. And, you know, we hope that you get a chance to jump into our current CD and that one or more of those have a similar effect on you. We'd be you know, elated for that to happen. Our current and new CD, it's our first self-titled CD called The Sounds of Blackness. And just a couple of months ago, it was blessed to win an NAACP Image Award for Outstanding World Music Album. So we're thankful for that, man. And, you know, we hope that you and the listeners hear something that you like.
Actually, I have, man. Testify. Testify. That track there, awesome. Man, it's just really great. I love the chord progressions. I'm also a huge neo-soul fan and a gospel fan as well, having that background. And, you know, those chord progressions were just ones that I gravitate to as a player. And, you know, it just gave me a lot of ear candy and just really brought me back, man, to the old roots of music. You know, expressing
well,
that's
thank you so much. That's a great compliment to the writer and producers on that song. The writer is the featured soloist as well, one of our veteran members, Carrie Harrington. And she, like I say, wrote and co-produced the song along with, you just mentioned, Billy Steele, who's assistant director of Sounds of Blackness. And one of our drummers, Larry Robinson, we call him Cadillac. So when you look in the credits for Testify, you'll see those names, Carrie Harrington and Billy Steele, and of course, Larry Cadillac Robinson. And where I'm speaking to you right now from, Brother Spud, is Atomic K Studios here in Minneapolis, which is where that track and the entire CD were recorded, mixed, and mastered, along with our videos and photography.
Nice. Now, I did see the video for Testify. That was really put together well, man. The quality of work that you guys have produced and created over the years, and, you know, along with the other tracks on the CD, like Fly Again and Rise, I mean, these are just really great songs, and I'm guaranteeing anyone who purchases a CD is going to be really in for a big treat. I mean, it's just from start to finish. It's just really great work, Gary.
Oh, thank you so much. Like I say, we take no credit, man. We got enough sense to know that we're really just vessels, and we thank God for using us as vessels and letting that, blessing us with that music to flow through us. And, you know, Carl Diemer here at Atomic K does an awesome job with the recording and mixing and mastering, and with the video shoot and photography as well. So, you know, we're just really appreciative to him and to the studio, and of course to all of our special guests. And that's something else we should mention for you and the listeners. I know you already know we have some very special guests on this CD that give it a real international flavor. Speaking of Grammy Awards, you know, we've got Grammy Award winning guitarist Norman Brown.
Oh, yeah.
Guitarist and vocalist. And he and legendary jazz vocalist Doris Hines are featured on a big band jazz arrangement of The Spiritual, Every Time I Feel the Spirit. We've got artists from as far away as Japan and India as well. The Dreamers Union Choir, who's really our brothers and sisters over in Tokyo. They're guests on the record, along with we've got a master South Asian veena player and vocalist, Nirmala Rajasekhar, and she is on a song with the featured vocalist originally from Sounds of Blackness that sang Funky Town, Cynthia Johnson. They're on a song called Call to Healing. So there's a lot on this record.
Wow. Again, a big treat, you guys. Now, Gary, give me some background of, you know, what was the mission behind creating the Sounds of Blackness? I mean, I know it's really great music as a choir, and there's, you know, 10,000 choirs across the world. I mean, but what was the mission behind the Sounds of Blackness? Because I really think you guys really stand out from other choirs and groups that are out there. I really believe your music really has a healing source behind it. And it's just so much positivity.
Man.
Yeah, man, I'm really into the music and the spiritual side of it, man, how it moves people. And I just want some background, man, in the vision of how this was put together as a project.
Oh, absolutely, man. Yes, Sounds of Blackness, we're honored to say, began at my alma mater right across the river in St. Paul, McAllister College, and was originally founded as the McAllister Black Voices by one of our emeritus members, Brother Russell Knighton, a native of Beaumont, Texas. And back in 1969, going that far back, the college embarked on a very ambitious program to recruit students of color. And one of the offshoots of that is that they were successful with those efforts, and one of the offshoots of that was that the students initiated and began many organizations on their own. And one of those was this probably 50-voice group called the McAllister College Black Voices. And in 1971, when yours truly was a sophomore on campus there, they asked me on as director, and the vision really that God gave me was to continue the tradition of people like Duke Ellington. When you look at his interviews, when people would call him a jazz musician, he would quickly correct them and say, I do the music of my people. Duke, of course, did prolific jazz compositions, but he also wrote and composed spirituals, blues, you know, the music of the people. And in the tradition of that tradition, Sounds of Blackness said, you know what, we're going to bring the music of the African-American experience to people of all backgrounds with messages of inspiration and healing, like you were just saying. So that's the meaning of the name Sounds of Blackness, every sound of the black experience, hip-hop, jazz, blues, gospel, R&B, reggae, ragtime, rock, and we bring them with messages of inspiration and healing.
I totally agree with you, Gary. You know, one of the trends that I think you guys set is to have the so-called commercial sound into gospel music. I really think you guys really opened up and broke the barriers of bringing all the worlds together into one sound. You know, a lot of guys and gospel musicians, male and female artists, are, you know, they're tapping into it now and it's big, but I really think Sounds of Blackness were really the first ones that really opened up the door to a different musical world for all the gospel musicians out there. You know, I just want to put that out there as well.
Oh, God bless you, man. Once again, thank you. And we appreciate and receive that, man. But again, you know, we just acknowledge and thank God for it. And we continue, you know, to try to break down those barriers, as you say, and to bring the music of a people, our people, to the world.
I really felt that the church was my platform where I could really develop my skills as a musician, and just really developing that ear and the improv skills and learning how to feed off the energy of your other bandmates and just to be, you know, build that relationship amongst the congregation and all. Give me some other skills and some of the other teaching things that you've learned for being a church musician, having that background?
Well, that's always, as you say, my brother, you know, been, you know, at the heart of what we try to do as a group and as a musician. But originally, actually, my musical background is in drum and bugle corps. And as a native New Yorker, my brothers and I started in drum corps in the city of Yonkers, New York. And in New York, you know, growing up in New York in the 60s, there was music everywhere. And that's a lot of the reason that you can hear such a variety in the music that I try and arrangements that I try to bring. Because, you know, as you say, on Sundays it was church, but during the week and on the weekends in the 60s in New York, you know, on the corner, street corner, there was R&B and doo-wop, everybody singing and a cappella stuff, you know, singing Curtis Mayfield and the Impressions and on and all of those groups and all that music. And then plus a lot of ethnic music was in the air, Cuban, Jamaican, Puerto Rican, Greek, German, Italian, Irish, Jewish, Russian, all of that was there. So between those elements and us being in the Sam Dow Drum Corps in Yonkers, New York, and the church element, all of those influences were there. And anyone that knows that about me can hear all of those influences in what I try to do as a musician.
No, you can definitely hear it, Gary. And, you know, having all of that background, man, I just believe at church musicians, man, we're able to pretty much play with anybody. You know, I see a lot of session players and touring musicians, and 85% of the time, these guys have your church background. You know what I mean? There's just so many good church musicians. It's because of the variety of styles that are in gospel music. I mean, the tempos, the arrangements, the progressions, and it just, when you branch out of gospel and you go into something like jazz or R&B, it's just really easy for us to blend it at times, man. It's just because it's so melodic. There's so much structure and it's so big from a musical, you know, melodic standpoint, man. It's just endless of where you can go musically with your creations.
I agree. And, you know, that influence, it continues today. And the music is always been ever present in our lives, in our worship experience, in our daily lives, and as a people, really, even before African people even came to this country, music in the Afrocentric frame of reference was a part of every aspect, or is still a part of every aspect of life, whether it's education, politics, marriage, birth, death, art, music everywhere. And music is a part of everything. And we, of course, brought those traditions with us, you know, across the Atlantic Ocean kind of thing. And so you hear it in the worship experience, but you also hear the music, whether it's in the marches of the civil rights and movement and black power movement, you know, whether it's a part of our daily lives, whether it's grandma cleaning house, humming, you know, that music is in the soul because it was our defense mechanism, it was our survival mechanism, and it still is.
Yeah, definitely. Now, Gary, you wear a lot of hats as a musician in the industry, man. I mean, I really want to talk about your musical director background, because I believe as a musical director, man, it's a very heavy job. I mean, your ear has to be on point, you know, to blend all the vocalists and musicians together to get that one sound. Share with me some of your personal techniques that you've learned over the years and you still apply when becoming a musical director, that you work with other groups or other vocalists to really bring that sound together.
Oh, thank you. An excellent question, by the way. You know, again, originally I'm a drummer, and so it's something because I was blessed to be a staff producer for Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, Flight Time Productions, who have, as you know, relocated to Los Angeles, but we stay in touch with them.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the discussions we used to always have, Jimmy and Terry still to this day say that melody is king, and as a drummer, I would differ with them. I would say that rhythm is king and melody is queen. You know, we would have that friendly disagreement kind of thing. So, and the reason I preface my response to your question with that is that as a drummer, I'm always thinking rhythmically at the root and building melodies on top. I know a lot of people, writers and composers and arrangers that are in situations to direct and produce like your question is asking about. start actually at the other end and start at the melodic end. But for me, it's rhythm and harmony and melody, and then taking a look at what each arrangement calls for, who your personnel is, both instrumentally and vocally, and then having a vision with that, hearing it in your head, and then going about blending, starting with the rhythm section, adding our horns, and we're blessed with an amazing horn section in Sounds of Blackness that we've had for years and we still have. I tend to hear things symphonically. When a song or melody comes to me, I'm hearing like the whole arrangement. I'm hearing strings and reeds and brass and so on and so forth. And so a lot of times I'll have to pare down what's in my head kind of thing. Yeah. And then sometimes I don't. But it to me, making it happen is a matter of having the vision of where you would like it to go, balanced with what your available personnel is, both musically and instrumentally.
Wow.
Vocally and instrumentally, pardon me.
Sure. No, I got you, man. That's some heavy stuff, Gary. I got to ask, man, being a music producer yourself, let's say you're getting a new song and you're approaching a new project for a group or an artist. What sort of things really grab your attention of a good song? Is it the groove that you mentioned earlier with the rhythm arrangement, chord progressions? What are some of the things that you look for in a potential song for the group or artist?
For me, once again, as a drummer, I'm really attuned to what is the rhythm, what's the groove. I'm looking for and feeling and wanting to feel syncopation and polyrhythm. As a drive in there, and then also as a keyboard player, loving dense harmonics, and dissonance, and all that kind of thing. Diminish, we like that kind of thing. Not always, but frequently we tend to gravitate towards that. So if that's happening, and then of course I'm a bass fanatic. Now, I'm not a bass player, but sometimes my bass player might differ with me because I play a lot of left hand, just out of habit kind of thing, because I hear the bass line, so prominently in my head. So for me, that's the foundation, rhythmically and with that bass line and with the harmonics kind of thing is what I'm looking for initially and what I'm attuned to.
I agree with you, Gary. I'm kind of the same way when I listen to a song and I start breaking it down piece by piece. And, I always look at the drums and the basses, the meat and potatoes on the plate. It's the bottom and it's that foundation, man, that, pulls us into a groove. It could be a slow groove or a fast groove. If that pocket is there, man, we're going to rock with it,
I agree. The other thing I am is probably a frustrated horn player. Because I hear a lot of horns, in my head, and again I'm spoiled, by our horn section, that we've been blessed with for so many years, kind of thing. But in the tradition, of James Brown and Sly and the Family Stone, and the great bands that featured horn riffs and all that kind of thing that were interwoven with the rhythmic syncopation or the syncopation of the rhythm section. I'm definitely in that mode myself.
Yeah, man, I love horns, man. Earth, Wind, and Fire, the Blackbirds, right. Tower of Power. I mean, these guys,
Chicago, right?
Chicago, man, they really just laid that foundation and really became really big for their horn section. I mean, how many pieces do you have in your horn section?
We normally travel with three. We have as many as five. But normally on the road, you'll see our trumpet player, who's a native of Detroit, used to play for a legendary group called Brainstorm, Larry Sims. We call him Section because he sounds like a brass section all by himself.
Wow.
So Larry on trumpet, and then my New York brother, as I call him, because he's also a native New Yorker, he's on trombone. James Brown would say on the big horn. Trombone, his name is Juan Navarro. And then alternating on tenor and alto sax primarily, but he goes all the way to Barry and all the way up to soprano, David Wright III. And David plays, with everybody, Doc Severance and Larry. So quickly a word on our band, too, where our band, they are not pickup musicians or side. They are full-fledged members of the group, even though some of them we share with other groups. For example, our guitar player, who goes by the name Devo, also plays for the Commodores. So, we share him with them. And one of our drummers, Brandon Commodore, is also a drummer for Mighty Mint Condition. our former label mates on Perspective Records, Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis's former record label. So all of those connections are there.
Wow. You know, that's important, though, Gary, you know, because I tell a lot of guys, you know, I speak a lot about how your song translates on stage from the studio. And a lot of times, you know, you hear people like, oh, it doesn't sound the same that it did on the CD. And I always tell people, so we want to keep in mind some of the groups out there hire specific session players for the CD, and they also have their touring musicians along with them.
Right.
And, you know, the feel and the dynamics change, you
right.
know, once you hit that stage, man. So, you know, having that touring musician along with you in the studio really helps, because it's going to translate well for the audience to recognize the CD better and just to recognize certain hits and certain attacks that they do. I mean, that's really their own signature sound. You can only get that from the person that really created that on the CD. So that's, hats off to you on that one.
Oh, bless you, man. Yeah, we were, you know, just to round out, you know, the band, because frequently, and the band is good about it, you know, frequently the attention, both in interviews like this and others, goes to our vocalists, to our singers, and we understand that, you know, we're not mad at them, we love them, we understand that, we accompany them, but, you know, we always try to, at any opportunity, give, you know, the band that recognition and love as well. So our percussionist, Daryl Boudreaux, you know, and on bass, Johannes Tona. And before him, Brother Paul Johnson, who played with the legendary group Haze. And on guitar, we mentioned Devo. But before Devo, Solly Hughes, who played with Paul Johnson and the group Haze. So just a lot of Minneapolis sound history. You know, like we mentioned Cynthia Funky Town Johnson mm-hmm. a little earlier. So a lot of Minneapolis sound history wrapped up in Sounds of Blackness.
You know, I think a lot of guys are asleep on the Minneapolis sound, Gary. I mean, there's so many talented musicians, and Minneapolis does
yes.
have their own sound.
That's
you know,
right.
versus other cities like New York has their sound, West Coast, but Minneapolis does have a certain sound. I really think you really have to be in this environment to really capture it and to understand why it is we play the way we do. You know, I just feel like we're
right.
stuck in the middle, man, so we get a chance to pull from everybody and just really
yes,
bring it to
do.
The middle, so... Yeah, man, hats off to Minneapolis.
Absolutely. You know, my brother, I tell people frequently, you know, and hats off to our brilliant brother, Prince, who Sounds of Blackness have been blessed to work with on a number of different projects, both in studio and on stage, and we're very grateful to him always for his support. We tell people when his name comes up, and frequently it does, and when we're interviewing, you know, in relation to the whole Minneapolis sound, that... as brilliant as he is, he also evolved from what was already here and hearing what was around him. Groups, I know you know the names, that, and if they had had the wherewithal and exposure of even some of the Motown and Philly groups and so forth, that they would have achieved the same level of prominence. I'm talking about Showtime Part 1 and 2 and mm-hmm. Midwest Express and Philadelphia Story. I mean, you know, the list just goes on and on. So,
yeah.
You know, we grew up hearing them, and they were definitely, and when I say us, I'm talking about Prince, Jam, Lewis, Gary, Hines, all of us,
yeah.
on that whole R&B side musically. And in terms of grooves and arrangements and all of that, they definitely were influences as well.
Now, you guys really created and cultivated the sound for up-and-coming musicians and keyboardists like myself, man. You know, I tell everybody, you know, if you really want to get into the full musicianship, man, you got to go back at least 15,
right.
20, 30, 40 years to really get that foundation.
That's
and,
right.
And, you know, start stealing those chops, man. I've taken them all, man.
You know, it's so funny. I'm so glad to hear you say that. Another story, and don't mean to go on so much with these stories, but I try to keep them as brief as I can.
No, I love them, Gary. Go ahead.
I can't tell you the number of times, especially when I was still on staff, you know, with Jam and Lewis with Flight Time, where I would be in another city or at a music conference or an award show or something, and there might be someone who was aware of that I was, you know, working with Jam and Lewis, you know, with obviously through Sounds of Blackness. And, you know, Jimmy and Terry would just have come out with another hit for another artist kind of thing. And they would come to me and say, hey, man, I know you're right in the studio with Jam and Lewis. What's that new keyboard they're using on so-and-so, man, that got this kind of sound? And what was that new keyboard on? And they'd be shocked when I told them, you know what, the reason you don't know what it is because it's not a new keyboard. You know, it might have been an OB8, it might have been a Polymoog.
Yes.
If you walk in the Jam studio,
old
yes,
stuff.
He had this new board, But the ones he had up on his main rack were the old school boards.
Yes.
Yeah. So what's old is new.
It is, man. You know, I'm a huge Mini Mook fan, OVA, right. Oberheim. I love my Junos. I love my Jupiters. Right. You know, I'm only 37, Gary, but, you know, I've been playing since I was a kid, man. And, you know, I remember being in my uncle's studio, man. He had an Oberheim.
He had a
Jupiter. He had the Junos. All V8s, man. Got to have them. And, you know, pitch bend was like the first thing I saw of pitch bending my notes and my patches, man. That just really took my creativity and musicianship to another level, man, as a keyboarder. So, you know, I like to say, man, the vintage boards, those are it, man. That's your foundation. You know, finding that creativity, Gary, from a creator standpoint, man, I mean, do you really find that zone in the studio, or is it on stage with the rest of your bandmates and really feeding off each other in the audience?
I think it's all of the above. And it happens different ways. You know, it can happen, like you say, with that inspiration and electricity that happens only in a performance setting, you know, that goes back and forth between the artist and the audience, like you were just mentioning. And that sometimes, in fact, frequently also happens or begins in the stage set, you know, during those rehearsals where you're going on and locking in a groove, but then another variation of the groove will come and we'll try this, and so that'll kind of get the wheels turning. But then also that the other way, that it sometimes happens is away from the crowd, and you're on your own, either at the keyboard or sometimes when you're not even thinking about music at all. You know, you might be driving down the freeway or doing something entirely different, you know, jogging around Lake Calhoun, and then all of a sudden there's this rhythm or melody in your head kind of thing. The ones, you know, that are just directly, you know, God-given kind of thing, where your mind wasn't even on music, and next thing you know, here's this groove that you've been given.
Right. God, man, I know you're a Minnesota native, bringing up Lake Calhoun.
Lake Calhoun, that's right. I was just out there a couple of days ago, and Lord willing, going to do my exercise, probably get back out there tomorrow morning.
Oh, man, that lake is something else, man. That'll beat you down, man.
Yeah, good old Calhoun.
So what's on the musical agenda for 2012, Gary?
Well, a lot of things, my brother. First and foremost, we continue to promote our new CD because it is still just months old kind of thing. And again,
yes,
for the listeners, it's called The Sounds of Blackness, available Target, Walmart, Best Buy, and online, iTunes, Amazon, CD Baby, and so forth. And we would encourage also your listeners to go to our website, soundsofblackness.com, to our Facebook fan page and all of that. So we continue to promote the record. Also, speaking of promotion, there's a few projects. Well, we just got back from Los Angeles a couple of days ago, and we were part of a wonderful event called the Keeping the Faith Festival in Pomona, California, with Kelly Price, Raphael Sadiq. I mean, there were like 12 or 15 artists there, and we were blessed to be a part of that. So we'll continue to do those kind of things, you know, in conjunction with promoting the record, but also we are looking to do our first live recording coming up into early 2013 with the amazing a cappella chorus of Wiley College, the College of the Great Debaters, in case the listeners weren't totally sure. And so we're looking to do that project with them. Or we just came from a meeting down there last week with their college president and with their amazing director, Stephen Haley. So there's that. There's our Christmas show, The Night Before Christmas, here in Minneapolis. We may even do some shows on the road with that as well. And we pitched a song for the Olympics called Victorious. We're trying, you know, by the grace of God, that'll come through. And also a couple of soundtrack for some movies that are forthcoming right around Christmas time as well, that I can't say right now, and they're not definite yet, but we're believing that they're going to come through. So just trying to shake it up and make it happen by the grace of God.
Wow, man, it sounds like there's a lot of things on that plate. Well, Gary, it's been a true pleasure and honor, my brother. I mean, I'm a huge fan of your work, you guys' legacy.
God bless you.
And being a Minnesota native, man, you already know I got your back, man. I love all the things you guys come out with, and we definitely got to jam one day, man.
Oh, hey, brother, the honor would be all mine, man, you know. So I'm standing by for you.
Sounds good, Gary. Well, you have the best of luck to you this year, Gary, and the best of luck to the groups, the members of the groups, your band rehearsal, your family, and man, we'll chop it up again real soon, brother.
All right. Your wishes are command, and love to you from Sounds of Blackness.
Appreciate it, Gary. Have a safe one, bro.
You too now.
Thanks. And a big shout out and thank you to Mr. Gary Hines for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. Been a big fan of the Sounds of Blackness for years. The music that they've released is truly inspirational for musicians and also for non-musicians just for listening. Like I mentioned earlier, it's a very spiritual side to their music, and it's very uplifting and it's very positive in the message that they're creating and spreading to a worldwide audience. I mean, they're creating great shows, releasing great music on their CDs, and their musicianship, I mean, that just goes without saying with the Sounds of Blackness. For more information on the Sounds of Blackness, please hit up their website at www.soundsofblackness.com. www.soundsofblackness.com. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit me up at www.spud2tight.com. www.spud2tight.com. And to close out the show, I'm going to play a track that was released by the Sounds of Blackness. It is off their new self-titled CD, Sounds of Blackness. And the title of the track is called Testify. So I want to thank everybody for tuning and listening in. Until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace. Don't worry, it's alright.
don't worry, girl.